This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
We talk about liberation. I always find myself going back to Isaiah Berlin's two concepts of liberty as a starting point, where he distinguishes positive and negative liberty. Negative liberty being freedom from, and positive liberty being freedom to. Freedom from is more generally what we think of in terms of liberty or liberation. It's the liberty of John Stuart Mill's On Liberty. And we think about freedom from both political oppression and religious or social oppression. So we're talking about the freedom of an individual from political strictures that inhibit his or her capacity to be self-governing and self-regulating and pretty much live the life that they want without interference. That interference can be very physical and literal, like slavery, or it can be social strictures like the Victorian morality around sexuality and the rights of women, Mill was very concerned about. And the Passover story obviously begins with this question of sort of very literal liberation from physical and political oppression of slavery, of the Jews' conditions in Egypt under the Pharaoh. And the story of that liberation is, you know, summed up in the lines of "Let my people go." Liberty is the liberty to get away, right? To get out from under, and to be free to go establish one's own country and be self-governing. And that idea of political liberation in the 20th century for Jews of the Upper West Side socialist Jewish persuasion meant that there was a strong sense of alliance between the Passover sense of liberation and things like the civil rights movement and feminism and the attempt to shake off various kinds of yokes of oppression. There is, however, a more subtle notion of liberation, first of all in the terms of Berlin's positive liberty, because the Jews are not simply, in the Passover story, freed from the oppression of Pharaoh, they are freed in order to become the Jewish people under the commandments of their God. So that the story of Passover is not simply a matter of getting away from something, but also about receiving the commandments and substituting, in some sense, the rule or the yoke of the Pharaoh for the rule or the yoke of God's commandments. That freedom, in that sense, is very explicitly not simply freedom from and license. It's not now we can go off and do any damn thing we want. We can go worship golden calves or not worship anything at all, or just to have the complete freedom from stricture. But you're free only to the extent that you now are following some kind of proper way. You're free the way a train is when it's on the tracks, not the way a train is when it's derailed, right? And that freedom too very much has that kind of metaphor, that our functioning, our real freedom, only manifests under certain kinds of enabling conditions. So that certainly for the in the 19th century, there's a great controversy about the need for positive liberty as well as simply negative liberty. And when you read, say, Marx, he has a brilliant diagnosis of the conditions of economic oppression and that is manifest in the class system of capitalism. And yet the it's very unclear what positive freedom will look like once the negative freedom of disrupting that system is going to look like. This was the dilemma of all revolutionaries, really beginning with, you know, notably the French Revolution. French Revolution got negative liberty right when they cut off the head of the king, but the notion of positive liberty, of establishing a new order based on liberty, fraternity, and equality quickly devolved into the terror and chaos that was then put an end to only by the authoritarianism of Napoleon. And in the next century, when more, you know, after Napoleon was defeated and new socialist strivings were coming, the French people, when they finally got the vote again and had to choose between, had a choice to vote for socialism, they instead voted for a new monarch, Napoleon III. And this is where Marx got to say that history, what's the phrase, you know, the first time is acted as tragedy but is repeated as farce, you know, the farce of a new Napoleon. Alan, you know the quote properly, would you?
I think you got it.
Yeah. So it's the dilemma of positive liberty is the great conundrum of what are the proper enabling conditions. You see, everybody sort of says, we can't just have freedom from, we have to have things like education, right? I mean, you can be perfectly free, but if you're free and illiterate and impoverished, your opportunities are greatly diminished. Your freedom doesn't count for very much. So, there is always the question of how do you structure society to provide not just freedom from oppression, but freedom in order to develop our capacities. But Lynn, having fled, Marxism, having been born in Russia and gotten to the freedom of Britain, was extremely suspicious of utopian fantasies of positive liberty from the French Revolution to communism. But one way or another, we all are engaged in trying to understand the nature of positive liberty, and it's relevant again in the Passover story that having been freed from Pharaoh, the Jews are given the commandments. They're given the tracks to run the train on. This is how you're going to live a life on the straight and narrow, right? Now, in Buddhism, we come across something analogous. Although liberation in Buddhism almost never has anything to do with literal freedom from political or physical oppression. The freedom or the liberation that Buddha talks about is almost entirely internal. It dovetails with the political or the social, but in a kind of inverse way that we're used to. Buddhism wants to liberate us from self-centered attachment. And so, the original story of Shakyamuni, what you have is him trying to get free of all the wealth and opportunity that 19th century liberation was trying to get for people, right? I mean, he grows up rich and full of opportunity as a prince. Yet the story is of those conditions themselves being the oppression, that they are the source of attachment to physical comfort and security, and even attachment to family. Our usual political notions of liberation and positive liberty are how do we secure attachments to, how do we secure stability, sufficient shelter and resources to live a safe and stable life. Buddhism turns what seems to be common sense exactly upside down and say those things are your oppressors, and it's only through being homeless, unattached, insecure, that you're genuinely free. And yet, like the Jews receiving the commandments, the freedom of non-attachment attachment in Buddhism is turns out not to be a unstructured non-attachment. Turns out that non-attachment is very hard to maintain, and you need a about as many rules in the Vinaya to maintain non-attachment as you need in the Jewish halakha in order to maintain the proper way of following God. It's interesting that each of them have hundreds and hundreds of rules of the right way to follow a certain kind of path. In neither case is negative liberty presumed to be enough or something that will naturally flow from being released from oppression, is however we define it. To the extent that Buddhism primarily focused on a kind of inner liberation, a liberation from self-centeredness and personal sense of attachment, it finds its analogy in the 19th and 20th century in writers like Nietzsche and Freud. Nietzsche was very preoccupied with how our oppression is internalized, how we have internalized a slave morality of Christianity, so that even though we are on the surface completely free, we inhibit ourselves. We do not know what to do with our aggression, our expansiveness, our ambition. Right? We do. Freud, in his own way, said we're oppressed by another kind of internal set of superego strictures and internalized moralities and judgments and conflicts. And so Freud attempted to create a discipline of liberation from these internal strictures that in some ways is analogous to what we do in a Zendo, creating a discipline of attention and liberation. Nietzsche, although he diagnosed the sense of internal oppression, for most people was not very good at prescribing the alternative. He may have articulated a sense of it in Thus Spake Zarathustra, but in general we find that to be a relatively murky blueprint for how to lead a life. So what all this comes around to is that we have these cross currents in the idea of liberation. Liberation that seems to start with a literal notion of freedom from political oppression, to one that evolves to notions of inner liberation. Whatever, however it is that we conceive of what keeps us internally bound up. It's interesting to me now that the disciplines of internal liberation that we're devoted to, of psychoanalysis and Zen Buddhism, are suddenly confronted with a dilemma of political constriction that is makes liberation a whole new problematic. All of a sudden, folks are saying it's not enough that we find a personal, internal sense of freedom. But what are we going to do about Donald Trump, right? What happens if all of a sudden the world outside stops being free in the way that we've taken for granted? Are these disciplines of internal liberation of any use at all if you find yourself back in the position of the Jews in Egypt, right? What good would psychoanalysis do them? You know, what good would Zazen do them? They need a Moses, not a Freud, right? Psychoanalysis, in its earlier days, toyed with being a social and political critique as well as an individual therapeutic practice. I mean, if you go back to certainly Reich and this different early psychoanalysts who were socialists, there was an attempt to use psychoanalysis as part of a social and political critique, and you get that all the way down to critical theory of Horkheimer and Adorno. But Adorno, you know, famously writes this book called Negative Dialectics. It's a book about negative liberty. It's how, and he was extremely unwilling to suggest any kind of positive action in the face of his diagnosis of social conditions. This made him very unpopular with the generation in the 60s, and they turned more to Marcuse and Fromm, who were willing to embrace positive liberty. So I hope in some way this is all confusing to you, and that the notion of liberty and liberation is not as straightforward as we may tend to think of it. What are we liberated really from? What kind of life or action allows us to live freely? How do we do that here in the Zendo? How do we do that out in our lives?